Hi, everyone. I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County and your host for Education Conversations, where we share ideas on education today and ways to help prepare students to thrive. I want to say thank you to Public Supermarket Charities for sponsoring today's podcast and for everything, Publix, you all do to support education. You are around the state, loud and proud, and we are really grateful for your support. And I also want to welcome everyone to today's episode, Building Brighter Futures Through Business Leadership. We've got a great guest joining us today, someone who I have a lot of respect for, and I'm excited to introduce you to. And she's the president and CEO of United Way Suncoast. I'll tell you a little bit of a backstory first. Since 1924, United Way Suncoast has been mobilizing communities to take action to benefit all. And I want y'all to think about that for a minute, because what it means is that they are literally in their second century of uniting the region to generate support for hardworking families. And those hardworking families are often just one unforeseen expense away from facing something dire. We really attribute United Way for bringing it to the forefront and letting us know about all of this. And we're certainly going to learn more today from our guest. And so that is our president and CEO of United Way Suncoast, Jessica Muroff. So Jessica, welcome to Education Conversations.
Thank you for having me.
It is so great to have you. And United Way Suncoast serves several counties in our region. It includes Hillsborough, Pinellas, DeSoto, Manatee and Sarasota. Did I get them all right?
Got them all.
Okay, that's good. And it's so you all look at providing what, you know, the needs of families are today. You also look at what are some of the emerging needs. And I know you have done a lot of work in response to the hurricanes. And certainly we also care a lot about what's happening in education, and you all are at the forefront of that as well. So it's amazing, truly, how United Way Suncoast has like fingerlings in so many important social service impact issues that really do help elevate families. So I just want to give a shout out to you guys for the work that you're doing.
We so appreciate that. We do this always in partnership. So this is never by ourselves. It's always united.
And it's so true. Isn't your tagline something like "We Stand United" or "United We Stand" or something?
We always say "United We Rise," "United We Win." We also say "United is the way." And it is the way. Like, if we're truly going to create lasting and sustainable community change, you have to do it.
It's so true. And I bet in this polarizing kind of divisive world that we live in, you probably didn't realize how important your name and brand actually means today.
Absolutely, yes. And more important than ever. And I think that's how this really started to emerge was after COVID, you know, when we really realized that we had to come together to tackle community issues. We had to come together to emerge from these crises stronger and supporting our community. So absolutely, yes. United is the way.
Yeah, that's great. So Jessica, I know our listeners always want to hear background information of kind of what brought you to the role of United Way. And so my understanding is you're a Florida girl.
I am.
Which I am too. So that was actually really good to hear that. Tell us maybe a little bit about your backstory and how it got to you having this amazing career.
Awesome. Yes. I love Florida. I've lived here my entire life. I'm a twice graduate at the University of South Florida. Go Bulls. I have a master's degree actually in education. I didn't become a teacher. I went straight into working for the for-profit sector and using my communications degree. And I spent my first 15 years of my career working in the for-profit sector, marketing, strategy, and communications. And I had was serving on a lot of boards and in the community and was doing a lot of community work. And I think a lot of people sometimes have this moment when they kind of take a step back and think about their career and realize that I would like my career to be something where I'm really doing something in the community for the good and changing things in my community. And so I thought, let me transition to the nonprofit sector and bring my business skills to that sector. And I will say my first role was CEO of a small nonprofit called Frameworks in Tampa Bay that builds the emotional intelligence skills of youth. And it was a great job, but it was a huge culture shift.
Yeah.
and like going from a well-resourced for-profit company to a nonprofit, but that this journey, best career decision I ever made. And so, you know, being able to be CEO of United Way Suncoast now, and this is the third nonprofit that I have led, being a transformative change agent mm-hmm. to strengthen the operations of an organization, to strengthen the brands of these organizations so that they have sustainability for years to come is just, is my greatest joy.
That's wonderful. And I know there's several people that have made those transitions. I even made that transition myself. And so it's fascinating listening to your story when you moved from profit to purpose, maybe, and that's oversimplification for sure. What were some of the insights or aha moments that you had when you first made that transition into the nonprofit world? Because I do think sometimes there's some misnomers or myths. Mm-hmm. And what skill sets did you need to bring from the corporate sector that were really helpful to you as you made that transition?
Definitely those like foundational business skills. I think many times we think about nonprofits and we think about the really the heart part of it, right? The mission work and the impact in helping others. But at the end of the day, we are, you know, we may have a tax status of a 501c3, but we're still a business and we need to be run as such. And so bringing my business skills to strengthen the framework and the operations of these organizations so that they can be sustainable and thriving was critically important. You know, we may have some differences in our accounting standards and the ways that we do things that are very specific to nonprofits, but truly at the end of the day, we still have revenue that we need to raise. We still have to manage our expenses. We still have to really demonstrate our impact. Mm-hmm. And I would dare say that we have even greater scrutiny to our success and the impact of the dollars that we're investing as an organization. There's a much greater responsibility on our shoulders. And I welcome that. But that is definitely something that I've been able to bring that skill set to be able to strengthen these organizations.
Yeah, that's really insightful for you to share that. And so in my opening statement, I was speaking about kind of the hardworking families that are just one paycheck away. You all often call them as an acronym of ALICE. If you could maybe share with our listeners a little bit more about what ALICE is and how does that information drive decision-making for you and for other nonprofits?
Absolutely. So this is a research report that we invest in annually, and we actually have it for the entire state of Florida. And I think now ALICE, the report is across over 30 states in the country, but it's an acronym that stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. So these are working individuals and families who are earning, but do not earn enough to be able to afford a basic household budget. So what our researchers do is they calculate all the way down to the zip code level, what it costs for all of the different aspects of a basic household budget, rent, utilities, healthcare, transportation, basic cell phone plan, childcare if they have children, food. And so all of this is calculated and we layer on top of that the wages. And so what we see across our region is that 45% of individuals, nearly half of the families and individuals that live in this region are not making enough to be able to afford a basic household budget. They fall underneath that threshold. Now, the federal poverty line, which is a static number, doesn't matter where you live in the country, same number as far as what that income qualification is, that has stayed relatively steady between 11 and 13% over the last decade or so. What has gotten bigger is the number of families who are above the federal poverty line, but below that ALICE threshold. And we haven't seen market improvement in that, and that's something that we continue to work on. So we use that information to see where are those families within our region and how can we make sure that our support resources, our partners are coming together to support them so that we can build that financial security and sustainability for them so that we can give them the tools and resources they need to make it above that that ALICE threshold and into a place of thriving.
So it seems like you take a multi-tiered approach. So you look at not only trying to meet their immediate needs, but you're trying to also build their skill level so that they move into a sustainability where they can be self-supporting and independent.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how help me walk through the intersection of ALICE and education and where you all are seeing some of the data points in education and how that all correlates back to ALICE families and specifically, what are some of the ways in which United Way is making some investments in education?
So education is probably where we spend the largest percentage of our investments and annually because it is so critically important. And we really focus on early learning in two critical areas. So making sure that that children are entering kindergarten prepared to learn, and then making sure that they are reading on grade level by third grade. these two indicators here, especially the reading on grade level by third grade, are the most important long-term predictors of their future success in life. And so we believe very much, and as you do too, if we're able to get more children reading on grade level by third grade, we have exponentially increased the chances of that child being successful later in life, exponentially.
Yeah.
So this is why it's critically important to invest now in the interventions and supports to support these children so that they can be successful in the future. And then we do other things too with middle and high school students, and that's really more connected around workforce development mm-hmm. and really seeing what that post-secondary landscape and opportunities look like for them. So mm-hmm. making sure that they're graduating on time mm-hmm. and evaluating what options, whether that be career or education, are available to them. So this is a huge part of what we do. And how this connects to Alice families, you know, first and foremost, if we're investing early, we're going to be investing in their future mm-hmm. for their success. The second thing is that, especially in early learning, it is very expensive
yeah.
for a family, a working family, to pay for childcare. And in fact, in most instances, it costs more to send your child to an early learning center than it does to a four-year public institution in this state.
Yeah, and remember, Jessica, Representative Fiona McFarland is really a big champion for this. She's going to be coming onto the podcast soon to speak about some of that. So I think that's really a great point that you're bringing awareness about the disparities in the community for finding that early childhood care. How are you all addressing it?
So in several ways. So one of the, and I'm very excited about this. One of the big things, because this is coming this summer, is our summer care program. So families who, you know, have children at home and need but can't afford summer care options for them. And perhaps they are not quite reading on grade level or they have other challenges. The summer care program helps to get them reading on grade level, and sometimes even getting them ahead of the game so that they're avoiding that summer learning loss. And it gives families the support that they need to send their children to these high-quality programs over the summer. So we have had this program in Hillsborough and Pinellas County for more than a decade, and the outcomes are fantastic. For the first time ever, we're going to be offering this in all five of the counties.
Oh, wow.
This is expanded to Sarasota, Manatee, and DeSoto now, and we could not be more excited. So we're going to be, I think it's over 800 scholarships and programs that will be offered to children and families. And the wonderful thing is it's beyond just the support the kids are getting in the summer programs. They're getting tutoring. It's also tutoring. And then it's also giving these families the tools and resources that they need. So connecting them to the financial security resources that they may need, connecting them to literacy tools and supports that they can be really great parents and mm-hmm. supporting their children's educational journey. So that's just one example of how we're trying to close that summer reading slide mm-hmm. gap to help children enter next year with a really strong footing. We fund paraprofessionals in early learning classrooms because many times in our education, our public education classrooms, there are no resources
right.
to offer that additional expert in the classroom, especially these classrooms in schools where we have a high proportion of Alice families. Critically important to have that extra resource to help the children with their educational progress. We also do a lot with early learning centers around teacher development and training, and also increasing the resources and improving the educational environment for, mm-hmm. for these, we could call our quality childcare initiatives, for these early learning centers to really help them strengthen the experience that those children and families have. And then again, of course, working with those parents as well.
That is really fantastic. That was a great response because it just demonstrated how deep you're going, and not just wide, but you're going deep. And I think that's really important because particularly with some things like summer slide, without those summer interventions, we really do see a lot of setbacks in children's proficiency levels. And so being able to mitigate that can make a world of difference. So again, kudos to you all for, that work. So when you think about the 5-county region you oversee, what are some of the similarities and then what are some of the uniquenesses, particularly for us here in Sarasota County?
Sarasota is definitely leading the pack on these metrics as far as kindergarten readiness and reading on grade level, but there's still a significant gap. I mean, right. this is, we're still not talking about 100% of students.
Right, right. Yeah. So, well, I know that reading is usually hovering around that 65% proficiency mark. So even while Sarasota is maybe ahead of the rest, I think with the listeners, and certainly those listeners who are in the education space, I'm preaching to the choir, they know this. Those who may be new are supporting our work, supporting United Way's work, may be just surprised to realize that even in the successes that Sarasota is achieving, there is still a wide disparity gap.
There is. And then if you also look at it by zip code, so you'll see that the disparities are even greater in some areas. And so that's really where United Way and our partners, which I'm so grateful for our partners, this is where this work is so critically important, because we are zeroing in on the areas that really do need those interventions and supports. And that's really important.
Well, talk a little bit about the value of these partnerships, because I know United Way does a lot in that space. So what are some of the meaningful partnerships you're seeing that are resulting in some greater success?
So I mentioned our summer care program being a great blueprint from Hillsborough and Pinellas counties that we're bringing down here. Our quality childcare initiative is yielding some great success. And these early learning centers, these are small business owners, and we're helping to strengthen their businesses. We're also strengthening the outcomes and the educational opportunity that they are providing these children and their families. We work with nearly 400 nonprofit organizations
across
the region in some form or fashion in one of our priority focus areas. And it's never is United Way, doing the work. We might be leading the work. We might be doing the work in some cases, but we're almost assuredly bringing a collection and coalition of partners together to tackle these really important issues. And that's really where the magic happens, because there are so many great organizations doing work. We don't want to replicate that. We want to invest in that. We want to provide the tools and resources and support to make those organizations strong and effective. And that's really at the heart of the mission of United Way.
Yeah, and I can speak on behalf of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County in that we have very much appreciated the partnership that we have with United Way. You are a trusted partner and a credible partner. And I think that's just really important in these days and times. So as we kind of come to the close of our podcast, what is one of the things that you feel like when you sit around with your board and you talk about some of the things that maybe people don't know about United Way, they don't know about this. Is there something out there that you want to kibosh, or set the record straight on or share that may be enlightening to our listeners?
Yes. As an organization that is over 100 years old, there's very much a picture of what United Way is. And I think many times people think of us as a pass-through organization that is no longer relevant today. Mm. And that could not be further from the truth. Yes, we do fundraise and we do invest in nonprofit organizations. But gone are the days that it is just where we are raising dollars for a collection of nonprofits without any specific purpose. It is a very strong collective impact model. And I would say that the one thing that really makes us different today than we were, 20 years ago is our data for impact. So we are building the capacity of our nonprofit partners. We are providing much needed data and data supports like our Alice report, so that we're not having to reinvent the wheel. Our partners aren't having to reinvent the wheel. They're able to use the resources of United Way to further and advance their missions and their work. In fact, we've directly been able to quantify that with a coalition of nonprofits. United Way invested $1 million in their work. They were able to leverage that investment for an additional $3 million back into the work. I think this is something that people don't realize about United Way, is that we're not a pass-through. We are an organization that is strategically bringing organizations together, many times funding them, but building the capacity of our nonprofit sector so that we can be stronger in serving our communities and changing the lives of so many.
That is well said. It makes me think about when you introduce yourself saying that, you're a transformative change agent leader, which I would agree with, that also is reflective of United Way Suncoast. You all have adapted and really become even more relevant in today's times. As successful as you were in the past, I think you're becoming more so. So I would liken it in a comparison to in the for-profit sector, maybe saying you're definitely not like CompuServe. If we can remember, does anybody remember CompuServe? Yes. I don't know. I remember CompuServe. It came up in some conversation I had recently, but you're more like Google. I mean, because you really have reinvented and just become so responsive to the community. So again, congratulations to you and to United Way Suncoast for that. I'm glad you mentioned that. We go through the same struggle too. We don't want people to think that we're just a pass through. We have independent program services, so I can feel you on that completely.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Well, yes. Jessica, it's just great. Thanks for spending time with me today. Thanks for sharing your insights to our listeners, learning more about United Way. I know if listeners want to find out more, they can visit where?
So UnitedWaySuncoast.org. You can sign up to volunteer. You can get connected to any one of our partners. You can really understand the complexities and the challenges of our community through our data that we share on there. There's so many resources on there. So please visit us.
And also, guys, you know, you can always find our information on our website, edfoundationsrq.org. So again, Jessica, thanks for being a part of today's podcast. It was great seeing you and spending time with you.
I'm so appreciative. Thank you.
Yeah, it was great. So everyone, again, I just want to thank Public Supermarket Charities for sponsoring today's podcast and for you all just to tune in to any other of our episodes of Education Conversations wherever you listen to your podcasts. For now, this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.